Welcome back to another episode of the Jewish News Podcast. This week's episode is with Mrs. Tova Fisher-Rosenberg. She's the founder and producer of Names Not Numbers and the director of the Yeshiva University High School for Boys program, Yeshivat Makor Chaim in Israel. Mrs. Tova Fisher-Rosenberg, welcome to the show. How are you?
Thank you. Glad to be with you.
Thank you. You too. Thank you for coming on. So I guess we'll start. What is Names Not Numbers?
Names Not Numbers is an oral history Holocaust film documentary project that I created 19 years ago to teach the students about the Holocaust. Everybody, you know, that when we associate the Holocaust with the number 6 million, and that, of course, no one can grasp that number. But to understand the Holocaust, we can understand the story of one. And that's exactly what this project is about, that students are learning about the Holocaust by their being trained by professionals to research, to craft the questions used in an oral history. They interview the survivors. They're taught by professionals to use broadcast quality equipment, and they are filming the survivors. Then they're taught to edit, and they edit down their 1.5 interview with the survivors to 20 minutes and make this into the story. And these stories are collected together, let's say 4 or 5, as many as there are in a school's project. And that becomes a documentary of Names Not Numbers at whatever educational institution it's being done at.
Wow, it sounds really special. Where did the idea come from?
The idea came from, I was a day school principal in Pennsylvania 20 years ago. And one day I got a letter from the state that I could apply for an intergenerational grant. We had Holocaust studies as a formal subject in the curriculum. And I also just happened to have staff members who were the professionals who could really do this. I had my computer teacher, he really made film documentaries in his real life. I had the teacher who had been trained in Israel by Yad Vashem to teach Holocaust studies. And then I had myself, that I was a European history major. I had studied under famous professors at Hebrew University and at Washington University in St. Louis. And this is the brainstorm that I came up with. And wow. And the title, by the way, is really, you know, when you talk about a book, you don't sell a book by its cover, but sometimes you do. And definitely the title Names Not Numbers was so catchy and so meaningful and so connected to this project that's really what really pushed it off into the world. And we have today over 550 projects that have been done in this program.
That's really amazing. Wow. And how do you find the Holocaust survivors to interview?
At the program, the projects are done in educational institutions, schools, in synagogues, in JCCs, and all over the United States, Canada, and Israel. And it's really within the realm of the school's responsibility to try to identify the survivors that they want their students to be interviewing. Of course, if they have difficulties, I have I have a whole list of survivors in the different areas that are always willing to jump in and help out. If a survivor gets sick, can't come in for whatever reason, can't find one. So I definitely, where I'm able to, I help them out to identify the survivors, but it's really coming from the different institutions that are doing the project.
Wow, that's really cool. And how do you... How big is the program today?
Today we have over 50 schools, again, throughout the United States and Israel, that are in Canada, that are doing the project. We've really gone into, which is something very amazing and definitely wasn't my original vision for the project, and that is we're doing the project in public schools. We're doing the public schools, many of them in Florida, also in the New York, New Jersey area. Some are done as standalone projects that the public school, they have their teacher who's coordinating it, the principal, the students. And in the public schools, I can say most of the students are not Jewish who are doing the project. Maybe in some schools, I can have one Jewish student out of 4,000. So most of the students are not Jewish. And we also have collaborative projects, which would be a Jewish day school together with a public school doing the project. We have a university doing the project. We have a few of synagogues that are doing it, like Sunday school, JCC, which I say after school, Sundays. So it really is going from a formal program, former course in the school's electives. Students are getting graded on it. They're, you know, it's really a formal course. And in others, it's an elective that they choose to do it on the side, almost like a club. But their students are very devoted to the project, and they definitely have to be because they're doing everything. And that's what is so unique about Names Not Numbers. Oral histories, even by the way, go back to the time of the Civil War. So it's not, we haven't invented an oral history. But the fact that the students are doing every piece of this and coming out with a very professional documentary, which is then archived in major academic institutions and in museums in the different communities, that really is a great credit to their work.
Wow, that sounds really big and really special, I guess. You know, you mentioned all the different forums and states and places it's in. What does running this entail, and how do you find time for it?
Now you know what I do at 2 a.m. You know what? It's what should I say? My passion, and I guess you can see that in all of the projects. I'm the producer. I'm the one who checks the films. I'm the one who has all of the contact with the filmmakers. We have approximately 20 filmmakers working in different places in the project. And it's my husband, Dov Rosenberg, the executive producer, who works side by side with me on this. And we have also a few volunteers that are as passionate, I can say, as I am, and really assist in the different facets of the project, because there are really many pieces to this. It's not just going in with a camera and pressing start.
It sounds like a lot. Where do the videos go when they're completed?
Okay, the videos, first of all, the original entire interview, the hour and a half up to 2 hours is the time that the survivors are being interviewed and filmed. That originally, the whole entire unedited version goes to the survivor, and it also goes to the students so they can do their editing and make it into the 20-minute oral history. They're editing the hour and a half, 2 hour video down to approximately 20 minutes. So that's one piece. Although we are in the age of moving away from DVDs, but there's still physical things that you can archive, that you can put in a box in a library or in a university. So we, for every school, comes out a video that includes the film that is screened at the public event. I'll tell a little bit about that. Plus the 20-minute edited interviews for every survivor's interview. So those are the ones that are sent to the different libraries, to different universities, Holocaust memorials, to be archived. And of course, the students receive it, the survivors receive it. And then every school has the links that they also send out to their population of the, what we call the screener. The screener is the film that is shown at the end of every project. Now, this is something that's also very unique. The screener is really the story of the two journeys. One is the journey of the student learning how to do this project, and we're doing it through their words. And the other is part of that screener is approximately 10 minutes from the 20 minutes that the students had edited. And that's a mini version of every survivor's story, which includes before the war, during, and after the war. Now, what's so unique about the students' place in all of this and their journey is we're interested and it's extremely important for us and for the world to hear the students and what they learn from it. Not just what they learned, you know, just for that day of interviewing, but what are they going to do with what they've learned and change the world? And unfortunately, you know, the project started 19 years ago. We're seeing today much more interest, obviously, by schools all over to do the project, and interest in the world to have people come to these events and to hear the survivors and watch the movie and meet the students. Our events run from anywhere from 250 participants up to 1,000. Wow. So these are already becoming real community events, not just a school project. And the fact that these institutions are taking the DVD, it also shows the quality of it. There's one highlight, or really two highlights, that I would like to talk about that just happened recently, sure, a couple of years ago. One is, I mentioned that we're doing the project in public schools in Florida, in the state, throughout the state. And when we started it, it was in Greater Miami. The head of the Miami Jewish Film Festival turned to me that year. He had been to one of the events, turned to me, and he asked if I could give him one of two things. One, I would make a new film, which would be the best of the five, that would include all 89 kids who participated in it and all the survivors, or I would just give him one of the school's films. If I would do the best of the five, it would become the premier film of the Miami Jewish Film Festival. So, of course, I was going to choose that one, and didn't know how hard that was. So we made the film for the Miami Jewish Film Festival, premier film. Somebody from ABC, the National, picked up on this, and they turned to me and asked me if I would be willing to edit that down to broadcast, which is from 78 minutes down to 58 minutes. And if so, ABC would offer it to their over 320 affiliates, that they would be able to choose one date and one time slot from October to December 2020, and they would screen Names Not Numbers on ABC in that community. So over 260 of those affiliates picked up on it. So we had from Puerto Rico to Alaska to Hawaii to all over. Amazing. The states. Wow. So, and from that came another honor, and that is the Wilbur Award, W-I-L-B-U-R. That's an award in the world of communications for something, you know, in whatever category is essentially changing the world. And that's, you know, what should I say? That's really the motto of the project. You know, what can we do to change the world? So we won in that, in our category.
Congratulations.
We understand that there were 75 judges and it was unanimous. So I think that's, you know, also extremely special. And the award goes to the kids who do the project, the teachers who mentor them, the filmmakers who make the film, and of course, to the survivors. And it is definitely a great honor to and privilege to have been able to showcase their work and for everybody to really get this honor.
It's really special. Are there additional things that you have done in recent years as the time to interview survivors is running out?
Well, a few things. Number one is we're going into really archiving, besides archiving the, you know, these films that are in the museums and different centers, but to open a part on our website that would be archiving the 20-minute interviews. Also to use it as a teaching tool. That you were, you know, it's going to be archived in more than one way. One can be like an interactive map. You press on Krakow and you come up with the few, you know, the survivors who were interviewed and talk about Krakow. And you can follow their, you know, their route through the internet. That's one. We're also going into, we're making this year, 4 or 5 documentaries, not school projects, and we are choosing individual survivors and we are making the documentary about them, the aftermath. What can we learn from them? Their resilience, how they picked up their lives from nothing, and what they do today, not just for society, just how we learn from a human standpoint, that somebody who's gone through the most horrific conditions imaginable is having, you know, smile on their face. And the kids always talk about that. At the end of the interview, they mention like they've heard these horrific stories and they walk out there smiling and they're hugging us. And they're, it's like a complete turnover. And that's something that, especially today in the world, we need to learn from them. So we're making these separate documentaries that our hopes would be one that I will get that into the schools that are doing the project, other schools and film festivals. You know, this is something that everybody can learn from and we should learn from them.
Wow, it's a really good lesson. So I guess you mentioned the archiving and the website. Is there a way for the listeners to watch the interviews?
Yes, when we so the website is namesnotnumbers.org. Namesnotnumbers is a nonprofit, and under media, I mean, we haven't really started putting up as yet, but under media there are already some individual survivors 20 minutes that they are able to watch and learn from them.
Wow, that's really nice, and the whole program seems very special, unique, and impactful. And I guess we'll shift for a little bit to the other thing that you're the director of, the Yeshiva University High School for Boys program at Yeshiva Makor Chaim in Israel. What exactly is that program and how did you get involved?
Okay, so 16 years ago, I was asked by the head of school at Yeshiva University High School for Boys, Rabbi Mark Gottlieb, that he had a vision of having a program for students from MTA, the other name for the high school, to go to the Yeshivat Makor Chaim and be there for a short period of time, so 5 weeks, 6 weeks, and then to bring a few of their students to us when our guys come back to be with us also for a short period of time, 4 weeks. The whole idea was really to, and this is also unique, a one-of-a-kind program, that it's not just Americans going off to be at a Israeli yeshiva on an American program, that our students are going to be fully integrated into the yeshiva in Israel, and they are, quote unquote, Israelis for a month. And that's something, you know, there are many facets in all of this. One is they are integrated into all of the Jewish studies programs that are, or classes that are at the yeshiva. All of that's conducted in Hebrew. The students to go in the program don't need to be fluent in Hebrew. So we're obviously giving them also assistance that they can make it in the classroom. The general studies, when the Israelis have their general studies curriculum, we give the four core subjects by teachers that we employ that are teaching our syllabus. So our boys aren't missing out on anything. And then it goes back to the informal part that everything else that is done, the boys are 10th graders, for the 10th grade Israeli students, our boys are doing it. They live in the dorms together. They live in rooms. Half of the room are there, two Israelis and two Americans. So this is truly complete immersion, that the students, our students are getting multiple facets of Israeli educational life. And I think I can ask you also to give a little bit of insight as an alum of this program.
Yeah, it's definitely a very good program. I think the Names and Numbers also is a very good program, which I participated on. I'm curious, the Makor Chaim program, both because it's international and you're dealing with so many different parties, what does running it entail?
Running it entail is, I think, everything that could go into a foreign program is what I do for this for the project. And, obviously, first the students apply for it. The school chooses, I'm part of that process as well, choosing the students going on it. And then for Israel, I mean, we have a counselor, a madrich for our boys there that's identified by the yeshiva there, but working on ideas of what can be done for extracurricular activities, what can be done for the weekends. Some one weekend they're in the yeshiva, one week they're at Yeshiva University site in Gruz, but then we have other weekends as well. What can they do for Chesed projects? So every year I can say that this is, we're not copying from the year before. Every year it's a brand new program with brand new ideas. And that's what makes it such an interesting thing for me to run, because I know how much we can be creative and not just stay within the box. So this is, what we do all the time. And so it's really overseeing everything. I'm there with the students, And what should I say? The person who solves some of the little problems that also happen. And but it's a challenge. But on the other hand, it's something that I can say that, you know, in my own life, the two pieces of in education that are so important to me, one is Israel education. I also direct the Hebrew language department at MTA, and Holocaust education from, you know, very outset of my university years. And I can also say that, especially I'll go back a second to the names and numbers, that I'm coming originally from St. Louis. And St. Louis is a Jewish community that had very few survivors. I, until I got to Israel on the 1 year program at Hebrew University, had never seen a tattoo on a survivor's arm. So I'm essentially learning about, and my family, my parents, no one was in the Holocaust. So they were in the United States. So it was like, I'm learning about the Holocaust through the eyes of the students that are doing my project.
Wow, that's really cool. Have other schools tried to replicate the program in Israel or bring you in to do the same?
No. I mean, there are, of course, you know, many American programs. The different day schools will take the students, you know, it could be for 3 weeks. You have an American high school there, the Mus High School. By the way, I also taught there once upon a time. But the way that we do it, no, it's a one of a kind program that all of the students who participated, whether it be you and all the boys who've gone at it in the past 15 years, and also the Israelis. It's life-changing for them as well, that they're coming to be part of the culture now of MTA, together with all the boys who were on it, on the program in Israel. And it's, you know, it's the friendships that are developed, but more that everybody sees, like, you know, what can we give back to our educational institutions from what we received from them? And that's very special.
Oh, yeah, definitely sounds very special. And to wrap up the interview, we'll end with the same question that every episode ends with, which is, you've been at so many different events for Names Not Numbers and spoken to so many people about Makor Chaim. And naturally, that means that you've been asked so many questions. But even though you've been asked so many questions throughout your life, there's always questions people were never asked that they wish they were. So looking back, what's a question you've never been asked that you wished you were, and what answer would you give to it?
I think for me, let's talk about the Names Not Numbers. I think to me, the biggest question is, what do we do with what we've learned? We're seeing what's going on today in a horrific racism, intolerance, anti-Semitism. All the students participating in this project, and for that matter, the viewers of the films and listening to the students and hearing the survivors, what can they do? What can everybody do to change the world? And how can we be an upstander? Whether it be, you know, political, go out there and vote, write to the congressman, get more schools involved to do the project, because our heroes are unfortunately, you know, in their 80s, 90s, and we have survivors that are age 100 that were also interviewed this past year. So what do we do? Because it's in our hands to change the world, and we have to really think about that. Israel, the boys who go off on the Makor Chaim program, it's also, they're being acquainted with Israeli life that they would not have a chance just going on a vacation or on an American program. Many of our students, I can say almost all of them, go to gap year number one, they go to gap year number two. They stay on and they serve in the army. They come back and they make Aliyah. All of that, and all of everyone will talk about that the door was opened to this idea by the Makor Chaim program that MTA hails.
Wow, very nice. Both programs are, as someone who's participated on both of them could say, they're both really amazing and transformative. And thank you for taking time to speak about them today.
Kiva, if you have another minute, I'd like to, sure. There was one question that you didn't ask me, and that was about my favorite moment in an interview from Names Not Numbers. My favorite moment happened, there are two moments. One was the second year that we did the project, the students interviewed a World War II veteran, and he had been a liberator of Buchenwald. And they asked him, you know, describe the day of liberation. You know, he's coming into the camp. And he responds as follows, that he was walking down the path coming into Buchenwald, and this short, emaciated survivor runs up to him. And he looks at the survivor and he says to the survivor in Yiddish that he's Jewish, the liberator, the person in the army. And the survivor looks at him and says the following, "What took you so long to get here?" Now that same veteran came to another school and was interviewed. He was from Baltimore. So he came into New York and he was interviewed at a school in New York. And to that, and because obviously I knew his background, I made sure that we had a survivor who was a survivor from Buchenwald, was back-to-back interviews together with the liberator of Buchenwald. And it was incredible to watch the meeting of these two, the survivor meeting the liberator. I don't think there's anything, I mean, the tears were all over the place, obviously, and in the final film, and they both came also to the event. They couldn't get enough of each other. And to think about, where it's brought the Jewish people and where this project has brought us in Holocaust education.
Wow, it's really special. Thank you again for joining.
Thank you, Akiva, for having me.
Thank you for listening to this past episode of the Jewish Schmooze podcast. To get our latest updates and contact us, you can follow us on Twitter at Jews_Schmooze. If you want to sponsor an upcoming episode, you can reach out to JewsSchmoozeMarketing@gmail.com. And if you give us a 5-star rating on whatever platform you're listening on, that'll be tremendously appreciated. Thank you so much, and hope you're looking forward to the next episode also.